Hey, and welcome back to the CFO Story. I'm your host, Jason Lee, and I'm joined today by my co-host, Sammy Abood.
Hey there, welcome.
And we have Ms. Sarah Wells, the CFO from Spruce Power. Sarah, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And I know that you made a two-hour trek out here to join us on the podcast, so yeah. I'm hoping that is absolutely worth it and that you go viral from this. That
people are like, here we go.
Like, right, you're going to be a big deal when it gets done. You can have your own TikTok, YouTube channel and everything. So that being said, we're here to talk. I mean, you have an amazing story. I really do. I think your transparency, your honesty is part of the reason I wanted to have you join us today, and really your walk from where you started in business to where what you're doing today for the organization that you're part of. And you've been the part of really a transaction. So you just went through that process.
Correct.
In the financial role of somebody who was getting purchased.
Correct.
Right? So we're going to talk a little bit about that. And then also we're going to talk about building a team, culture, and then succession because
sure.
You've had a lot of experience in facing that as well.
Sure.
So, but before we dive into that, why don't you give our audience a little bit about your background?
Sure. I started out as an auditor in mid-market, so spent a couple of years at PKF here in Houston. Went off and started my own shop. I was a sales rep for the outdoor industry, so spent 5 years with the buyers of REI and Whole Earth Provision based out of Austin. Did that for a few years. That was a fun and tough lesson, owning your own business. Called up PKF after 5 years and said, hey, I kind of like the direct deposit, so can I come back and mm-hmm. have some insurance
yeah.
and have those benefits again? Did that for 5 years, got an opportunity to go into steel manufacturing as a senior accountant, not on the corporate side. I ended up on the operations side, which in hindsight was a pretty pivotal turn for me. Spent 5 years growing in that role, led a team out of Atlanta at the end of that role, who was experiencing exceptional growth faster than market rate. So we had some work to do around processes and SOCs and things like that. Got an opportunity to come over into solar in November in 2018. And so similar story, building up a team and kind of building up a company ever since.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. And then, so I think we gave all of our CFOs an opportunity to pick things that they were passionate about and stuff that they wanted to share, maybe their most recent experiences. And you jumped on the team building and the culture component. So what is it that led you to make that part of the reason you want to discuss that today?
I always tell my team their success is my success. And I really view leadership in a servant leadership capacity, that I'm working for them and helping support them. And I know that sounds very cliche and it looks really great on a poster. But the reality is that if you haven't built up the team underneath you and they're not developing and they're not achieving success in their own personal and professional development, you're gonna limit your own success as well. And so it incentivizes you to help support them. Alternatively, it incentivizes you to make quick decisions if it's a failed hire, right? You can only drag somebody along or try to develop them so long when you realize we've reached the capacity, we've reached the max at this relationship. High five each other for the work that we did mm-hmm. do, but decide to move on. So in both of those scenarios, their success or failure becomes your success or failure. So that is the core, the foundation of your own story, is making sure that you're giving other people an opportunity to track in the same path that you did.
Wow. Okay. And so I know you said you came to Spruce Power in 2018.
Mm-hmm.
That's a 5 year, because you guys recently sold, correct?
Correct.
Was it last year?
So when I joined Spruce, we were in the middle of a pretty transformational reorg. We were foreclosed on by a private equity group. We defaulted on a senior facility with them, and they hired our now CEO to come in and evaluate if it was savable or start a liquidation plan.
Wow.
I think they gave him something like 6 weeks, the story goes, to figure that out. And in hindsight, this was not very radical for his personality, but he said, oh, I can save it. It's going to be pretty radical. And being private equity guys, they said, yes, of course, you're going to save our investment. Let's
sure.
do it. So he picked up the company and moved it from the Bay Area to Houston, where we had an existing call center, restarted everything there, and including new auditors. So when I started, I had a brand new accounting team that had a 1 month transition period with the former team and new auditors. And I was coming out of steel manufacturing in a huge reorg. I very quickly realized that I had to find out where my key players were and how we were going to pull this off, because I knew steel manufacturing. I didn't know anything about solar.
Wow.
And I needed to not only learn it very quickly for myself, but get my team up to speed very quickly. So learning an industry, putting in place processes, dealing with new auditors, it was a pretty radical transition, and we were definitely jumping feet first into the fire. And it was rough. It was a rough 6 months. But we spent those months learning as quickly as we could, checking a lot of boxes. Some days you literally were just trying to make the next right decision. What is the next right decision to make?
Wow.
So I'm trying to think through the interview process. So then when they're like, so we're not really sure this company is going to make it, but we'd love to have you come on board. And then, explain to me how
that
was
the appeal.
Yeah, exactly. Help me understand why you said, yeah, sure, I'll take that job.
So my growth and my path up to that point had felt very safe, right? I was very safe as an auditor. You can retire as an auditor. They need the bodies, they need the hours. You're pretty safe, and you feel like you're kind of wrapped in a cocoon. And leaving that feels very scary. So I left that and went into steel. And we had also just gone through transformational M&A with our private equity firm there, merged us with one of their other investments, but we didn't really compete at all. And you can kind of see the writing on the wall. They're promising the street all of these synergies by merging these two companies together, but the manufacturing process is different. All of the accounting and the ERP systems are different. The only way you're going to achieve those synergies is by really starting to cut off the fat. And in that scenario, unfortunately, what happens in those really accelerated kind of transactions, the culture can deteriorate very, very quickly. Yeah. And he who holds all of the information holds all of the job security. And I just, at some point, decided I didn't have the stomach to kind of play the long game on that and saw my opportunities kind of dwindling pretty quickly. So the appeal was really to get my foot out of that door, just get an exit strategy. If it only lasts 9 to 12 months, that's fine. I just need a landing spot till I can find the long play. That was part of it. The other part was I had never been part of a wind down scenario. So I felt like even if it is only 9 to 12 months, I'll be able to say that I wound down a business. And I didn't know anything about that. I mean, there are legal ramifications to that. There are administrative ramifications to that. And so I really kind of wanted to experience that. So it was never actually a long play. I certainly had hoped that it would work out, but it actually was just an opportunity to get out of a job that I didn't see any runway on.
Like a bridge. Yeah. Like, okay, I'm going to bridge this thing, and then and here you are now.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So I think we were, with succession and culture and all that, building the team, when you said you had to come in and identify things, how did that process start? Like, where did it go? And then where is it at today?
There's not a lot of accountants in Houston that understand solar. We have one competitor in Houston. And so outside of trying to recruit and poach all of their best candidates, I had to find a way to relay the technical accounting to the team that I had in non-solar terms, just to get the basic understanding of how this works. Once I got through those first audits, thankfully the board and Christian, our CEO, asked me what I needed to kind of continue on to build the team up where they needed. And I was really grateful for that, because it allowed me to start hiring people that I thought could help us take the whole team to the next level. And that meant former auditors.
Right.
I needed somebody whose entire resume was parachuting into the unknown and figuring it out pretty quickly and then moving the team forward. And that's a special skill that I think auditors possess. You can find people who don't have audit experience who think like that, but it is a fairly unique skill. And so I spent quite a bit of time forgetting, don't even worry about finding other accountants with solar experience, just give me auditors. And then we kind of started finding applicable industries that might somewhat parallel solar, just so that I could relay and help new employees figure it out. But that was the plan, was to hire the technical know-how, hire based on cultural fit. So in those early days, I would sit with someone and say, I literally don't know if I have no career path for you. I have nothing. I can't tell you if you're going to get promoted in 12 months or 18 months. What I can tell you is there's a lot of stuff to fix and figure out. So if you will give me 12 to 18 months, I will promise you that I will try to figure out a career path. And if I can't, I will let you know. And people believed me. I think it was just the honesty of it. Like, this may not work out. We might all be out of a job in 9 months, but there's a lot of work for the next foreseeable future, and I'm going to try to figure it out. And I built a team like that in the beginning, and I kept kind of on that path as I continued to interview. I would, you know, call out our faults. Instead of asking them what their strengths and weaknesses were, I would say, these are the strengths and weaknesses of Spruce. This is what we do really well. This is what we're struggling with. This is what we need. You can Google and find out a lot of these things. It doesn't take long to figure out what's going on at Spruce. And I found jumping on that sword and being really transparent, people appreciated that. I didn't want anybody to feel like it was a bait and switch. I always said, no, you made an informed decision when you started. You may have thought that I was exaggerating. You may have thought that I was overplaying how hard it was or the challenges that we had, but I was very serious. And you made an informed decision. So you're here now. So let's figure it out.
So it kind of goes back to that servant leadership thing that you mentioned earlier, right? Transparency.
That's right.
Honesty, here's what you're going to get.
People want to know. If it's hard, it's not that they're unwilling to do hard work. Correct. And it's not that they're unwilling to roll up their sleeves, but they don't want you to lie. They don't want you to make promises that you can't keep.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I'm envisioning in my mind when Jerry Springer is like, who's coming with me, man? Like, I feel like that's the interview. They're just like, okay, I'm just going to leave the office, and you know, I can't promise you anything, but...
You mean Jerry Maguire?
Oh, that's it, Jerry Springer.
I mean, Jerry Maguire.
We're going to have the audience start throwing some chairs in here.
Yeah, well, it's about to go down. We're about to... there's a moment here where actually in 2 minutes, some dude's going to burst through the door back there and be like, that's my wife!
There we go.
So, sorry. Never mind, back to normal. Jerry Maguire.
It was a little bit like that, right? I didn't have a thesis.
Right.
And I didn't walk out with a goldfish, but... It was a little bit like that. And
so do you have any, we don't have to name names, but do you have anybody or what are the things that you're most proud of from your team? Do you have any really phenomenal success stories of people who just embraced that stuff? And then now they're just thriving, and what kind of characteristics that you would say define that person, like made them shine in this opportunity?
Yeah. So every single person that gets hired is approved by our CEO, and there is a form that we fill out, and one of the things that we have to communicate are not only the obvious technical skills required for the job, but we have to provide examples of how they have met our core values. And our core values are purpose-driven, results-oriented, and coordinated. And I have to know, during the interview, I have to get the answers to these questions somehow during the interview. Show me what your purpose is outside of work. Tell me about a time when you were highly coordinated in a difficult situation. Tell me about a time when you delivered on results. Some of those are easier. Auditors are used to living by results, right? So some of the answers are a little bit easier. Your job was to deliver results, right? Purpose-driven is actually a little bit harder.
For an auditor?
For a lot of people.
Right, in general. Right?
They may have a purpose. They don't know how to communicate it. They don't know how to message it. And it's been really interesting to use that formula to build our team as the basis for the entire culture, for the entire organization. We've now expanded on that to a book that we're reading, and I'm going to forget the author. So maybe if there's like a fact check at the end, you can add the author name. It's called The Ideal Team Player. And it talks about the first half of the book is a made up story about a failing organization that's trying to turn around, and they are identifying their key players and who's not working. And they come down to three basic characteristics. Is the person hungry, humble, and smart? And the back half of the book tells you more theoretically how to apply that into your own leadership style. And there's interview questions. Well, we layered that onto our three purposes, our purpose and our results oriented and our being highly coordinated, and found that if you interview on these now six characteristics, no matter what else, it will be a, it will almost certainly be a success story for Spruce in some capacity. But success is tricky, right? Because is your success just for the next X period of time? Maybe you're going through a transformation, and transition is the success, getting us from point A to point B. And then once we get to point B, we need to move on in a different direction. So success is not always promotions over the next 5 years and, you know, you're going to retire here. Success, you have to first define what does success look like for this role, for this organization at this time.
Wow.
And then you're working off the same expectations, right?
So, Sarah, this is all real refreshing for me to hear this. I'm relating to some of what you're saying. I didn't go through a wind down, but what I'm hearing you say is often people describe these attributes of people as the intangibles, right? These, you also have to look for the intangibles, but it sounds to me like it's more than that. It sounds to me like it's kind of a flip. Let's go for those virtues and values. You said core values, right?
That's right.
First.
Right.
The other things can be trained or taught, right?
That's right. That's
and that sounds like a successful team.
Yeah, it is. And so to your original question, everyone on our team has been successful because we hired based on these core values, and then we defined success.
Dude, there you go. Podcast over.
Like, someone right now.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we can't. Well, we could, but it'd be super
loud
for our audience.
Very refreshing to hear.
But I think that's a great way to pivot.
That's a great reference.
Yeah. But if we were going to pivot right now, we would pivot to the idea that you were talking about you get to one place. Maybe your goal is to 18 months. And when you got your employees, it was like, I don't even know what to tell you. Like, it could be 9 months, 12 months, 18 months. So now that's happened. Y'all actually have a success story. So y'all crossed that first threshold.
Yeah.
And now you're in the new threshold. Now everybody's off to the new race.
Yeah.
So I think that's a good opportunity for us to talk about this next part of the reason what you're going to share.
Sure.
What's it been like? How, you know, you got your team prepared to now step into this place. Talk to us about the M&A side, the preparing for the sale. First of all, like, when did y'all realize, okay, now we're sellable? I mean, how did that happen? What did you start doing? And then how did what did the light at the end of the tunnel shift for you guys?
Once we completed the reorg and we picked up the company and moved it to Houston, right after that, we refied one of the loans that we had not defaulted on. And in doing that, knew that we were going to save the company by expanding the balance sheet and growing the company. Also, we were with a private equity firm that is really a credit shop. And so they are not positioned for long-term ownership. And so we always knew that the end game was to sell, that they were not interested in holding us long term. And so we would, you know, make a couple of acquisitions along the way and then try to go out to the market, and we'd get pretty far, but then the deal would fall apart, and then we'd go do more acquisitions, go out again into the market, get pretty far, and then the deal would fall apart. By the time last summer came around and we were going to go out to the market for the third time, most of the executive team had done this twice before. So we were a little, you know, not cynical about it, but we definitely were not as doe-eyed as we were the first time.
Right.
And our energy was probably a little bit different, and we were a little more realistic about what to expect. And we got better at telling our story. By the way, between the first attempt and the third and successful one, we were making improvements along the way. So the reasons that the first one fell apart, we immediately took it as homework and let's go address that issue. And the reasons the second one fell apart, let's go address that issue. So we were continuously improving as an organization along the way. And by the time the third one happened, we didn't expect it to be a public company that would acquire us. It certainly was not off the table, but I think that we were anticipating a pretty decent transaction. So as a result, as we were continuously improving, we were putting in place processes that should we be acquired by a public company, we would not be starting from ground zero. So we were building our control environment and getting the organization used to speaking in the words of internal controls and what that looks like so that we would be ready. So by the time last summer came around and we were really in talks to do this, when the buyer started identifying the risks associated with purchasing a private organization, some of those were mitigated with the fact that we had kind of been laying the foundation for this along the way. And that certainly helped and made it a much more attractive deal for them.
That's awesome. piece of cake, right?
What was when for those that are listening, whenever that time comes, because y'all had a couple of different renditions, you said you got better telling your story. What helps you tell a good story for a business?
You have to first believe it. And if you don't believe it, you're not going to communicate it very well. Yeah, you can get crisp and get it down to 2 minutes, but if you truly don't believe it, then you're not gonna be able to tell it concisely and crisply. And our story has changed, right? When we were private, our story was why you should acquire us and how this management team can continue to build on your investment. But now that you're public and you're speaking to the public investor, you have to speak to them in a different way. And it's been an interesting process post-sale to interact with investors differently than I did before and see what's interesting to them. It's been a lot of fun, actually.
Yeah, part of the story is getting there. And then when you're there, then the real work starts,
right? That's right. That's right. So from a team standpoint, we've been very busy. It's been, we've been running a very fast marathon since the transaction closed, and we're just coming up on a little bit of a breath right now, and PTOs are start, vacations are starting to be had, and people are starting to catch their breath and get some rest and really get some downtime. And I think, you know, we live in a world that's hustle, right? Hustle culture is kind of a thing, but that's exhausting, and you will burn out. And you're no good to anybody if you're burning out. And so I do try to really push on everybody to take some downtime, just disconnect. And I don't mean cut out early on a Friday. I mean, get on a plane and go somewhere.
There you go. Sure.
Get in a car and go somewhere. Yeah. Out of cell coverage.
Right.
We found that cruises are very expensive to have cell coverage. So if you really, really want to disconnect, get on a cruise.
Get on a cruise, yeah. We had that experience. Like Sammy and I didn't go on a cruise together.
But we were on the cruise.
We were on a cruise. We're that close.
Other people were there.
A lot of other people. I really like that this podcast starts with.
We were laying there. We're like, you know what, dude? We really should stop. No, you're 100% correct. I think the 10 days from that trip coming back and feeling recharged were definitely made me decide cruises need to be a regular on there. So let me ask you this. When you see, because it sounds like culture and embracing your team has been real critical, and I think we'd be remiss because I feel like people who are in y'all's role, there's a nonstop amount of work. Mm-hmm. Meaning it's perpetual. Mm-hmm. Like there's never this is the season where we don't do much. There's always just something, especially in your role as the CFO, because if nobody has an answer, then it pretty much gets on the CFO's desk.
They're
like, hey, we don't have...
Where's Sarah? She knows.
Where's Sarah? Yeah.
Absolutely.
She'll know. Let's just find Sarah.
So that's actually been a really one of the more challenging lessons for me as my career has progressed, especially at Spruce when I joined and they were all of us that joined at the same time because the company moved from California to Houston. There was a lot of turning over rocks. Does anybody know what this entity is doing? Does anybody know, do we have a truck at this company? And does anybody know where the truck is? Lots of turning over rocks and discovering it from the CEO down to the staff.
Cool.
So once you start building up your team, it's hard to kind of break away from that and teach other people how to go find the answers. And I've actually been pretty verbal with my team that is a challenge for me. I get impatient when I see email threads with people not really knowing how to get to the answer, and I'll just jump on the email and just answer the question. Just, this is where you go and this is how you do it. Well, it's taken me a while to figure out the reason I'm getting 250 emails a day is because they're coming to me for the answer and I'm not teaching them how to go get the answer for themselves.
That is a tough thing to break over, isn't it?
It is. And so my plan now is if I keep telling people that that's a development challenge for me, maybe they will help me to stop doing that. But it started really simply with me intentionally not responding to emails, just letting it sit. That what was the worst case scenario if I did not answer this question in the next 24 hours?
Yeah.
What would happen? And if the risk was low, right, then I would just let it sit. And it took a while, but people started figuring out how to answer the questions themselves.
Start picking up the ball themselves.
But that has been one of the more challenging roles for me, and I'm assuming it's some level of control, right? But also just making sure that we're doing the right thing.
So. You're just dropping all kinds of wonderful nuggets of wisdom. So
and the tough ones too, the difficult ones to, you know, to slice up.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah. I mean, just
I can relate.
I think somebody, whether even non-CFOs, there's just great leadership content here. Mm-hmm. Right, really good insight. Let's pivot though, and let's talk a little bit about your success, because one of the things that jumped out to me when we first met, aside from your raw transparency, which I thoroughly enjoyed, was just how, you know, you kind of your fight to get to your spot. Like it was not easy, right? Felt like you had to make a statement and push through and continuously battle. And you were sharing some stuff over lunch that I thought was great. But I think people need to hear some of the factors that led to your success. I think we'd be remiss not to hear about that. So talk to us about those.
When I was growing up, I always knew that my success was only on my shoulders, that I was not going to be able to depend or count on anybody else. And I was told, you have to go to college, and by the way, we can't afford to pay for it, so better get a scholarship or some loans, because you need this to be successful in your life. And there was no real reason other than probably on my dad's side of the family, no one had graduated from college, so he's bringing that to the table. And my mom was in education, so she had the college degree, but, you know, teachers don't make a whole lot of money. And so seeing their struggles, you always want for your child, you know, better than what you had. And what they could give me was not money. What they could give me was life lessons and wisdom. And so I always just operated on the, you know, they weren't going to be there to save me, and that I had to figure out how to save myself. And so along the way, I thrive on kind of being the dark horse a little bit, kind of unassuming. You don't really expect me to be who you think I am. It, you know, good, bad, or otherwise, is a little bit of fuel for my fire. So I think that the story I shared with you is I've been passed up for promotions twice, and in both cases told that my male counterpart was not ready for his. And yeah, I could sit in that for a little bit and be really angry about that. And I was, for sure. But then you have to decide, what are you going to do with that information? You can leave. That's the obvious choice. The other choice is to stay and prove them wrong, because that's a really, really good feeling. Now you have to have balance with that too, right? Because
yeah,
you can drive yourself off a cliff.
Yeah, I'm about to say, right?
Yeah, at some point you have to just kind of cut your losses. And so it's not actually any different now. Now that I am CFO, people are going to be, there's a lot more risk, right? And there's certainly going to be people who are looking for me to fail. Not that they're trying to help me fail, but they're also not trying to guide me along the way. Someone recently asked me, how do you feel about your promotion? Are you really excited? Or are you thinking, what the hell have I gotten myself into? And I said, I really like when people doubt my ability to be successful. That's really fun to watch. And I couldn't believe actually how fast I said it. And I, you know, immediately started overanalyzing it in my head. That probably was not the best piece of information I could have said. But that's how I felt. That was exactly how I was feeling. And it's kind of fun for me,
you
for
go.
People to think I might not be successful.
There you go. Fantastic. And one of the things that I think you talked about when it came to success and there was kind of your ability to embrace failure and create a kind of a culture around that. Tell us about that.
One of the things that early in my career, I would sit in these boardrooms with very smart people, Ivy League degrees, and listening to these conversations and not really knowing when would be the appropriate time for me to interject and ask a question. But the first few times that I did ask whatever question I needed to ask, the reaction from the room was always, that's a really good question. And I thought, if I'm asking these questions, we're in trouble. Why aren't you asking these questions? Why haven't you thought of this question? And the first couple of times it happened, actually, I thought they were just pacifying me or trying to encourage me to participate. But it happened enough times that what I realized, the first key to success is to ask all of the dumb questions. Be willing. Be humble enough and be willing to check your pride at the door.
Nice.
And ask the dumb questions.
To make sure they at least get addressed,
so
right?
So what if they think you're dumb? It doesn't matter. So that was kind of the first thing. The second item is, if you create an environment where people think failure is not part of the success story, mm-hmm. where failure is not the opportunity to learn and capitalize on that learning environment and keep it moving, you're going to create a hostile work environment, and you're going to encourage people to lie and hide things from you. And so if you create an environment where you're safe to fail and you view those failures as, okay, what happened? How can we keep it moving? People are going to come to the table with their very, very, very best, because failing is not fatal for them at the company. Hmm. And we found a lot of success in that as well.
Awesome.
Wonderful feedback.
A lot of wisdom here, which kind of leads us to the next question for you, Sarah. Would you have any words of wisdom, apart from what you've already instilled here today, but would you have any words of wisdom that you'd like to share with CFOs who are maybe still developing their craft or sure. are up and coming? What would you share?
For sure, ask all the dumb questions. Who cares if they think you're dumb? Who cares if you should already know that answer as a CFO? I'm a young CFO in a public company. The risk is higher. And people expect me to know a lot of answers, but that's not realistic. Nobody has all of the answers. You just have to know where to go get the answers at. So be willing to make someone think, why don't you know the answer to that? That's on them. Mm. You'll be smarter for it. So stay curious. Ask the dumb questions. Have a personal moral code and have hard boundaries around it. Know what the right thing to do is and don't go a second past that. Mm. That has to be one of your guiding forces. Whatever that moral code is, stick to it. The second you compromise that, you're failing yourself. Mm. You're doing yourself a disservice. And then again, creating an environment for the team to be safe to fail.
Love it.
Yeah. So along the way, would you say there was anybody that you would like to recognize for their contribution to your personal development?
Sure.
Because we're hearing a lot of wisdom. Who would you like to give credit to or recognize?
Sure. Well, I would probably first have to recognize my dad, right? Mm. For asking very direct, not sugar-coated questions when I would go to him for homework questions, or the way that he would respond to my questions was very challenging and very direct. And not quite debate team-ish, but, you had to kind of be on the ready because he wanted to know the answer. So for sure, my dad. Second, I had a vice president, I'm going to name him Mark Shearer, and I worked with him in steel manufacturing, and I was at the company, I think, 2 or 3 months as a senior accountant, fresh out of audit, trying to explain a variance to him, and he looked at me and said, see, the way that this works is you actually know what you're talking about, so why don't you go back and try again? And I was mortified. I was mortified. First, I realized I'm not a good bullshitter and I should not try. This is not working for me. But second, to always be prepared. And if you need more time, then you ask for more time. And he, along the way, just really helped me how to operationalize accounting, get out of that corporate mentality and truly work with the business. In manufacturing, we worked with plant managers who had, only high school degrees, and in some cases, some of them didn't even have a high school degree. You're trying to convince these guys to live within your internal control environment and to be really excited about inventory and things that are only exciting to accounting and finance professionals, and speak to them in their language, right? They don't know technical accounting. They don't care about controls. They care about safety, good quality mm-hmm. materials, and getting as much out as they can. So learning how to speak to them in their language so that you can get the results that you want was a really good lesson. And Mark for sure taught me how to do that. And he taught me how to call bullshit.
Fantastic.
Awesome. I love that.
The second one would be the CEO that I have now, Christian Fong. He, gave me all the rope that I needed to hang myself, and I lassoed every time. We sat down along the way, and I'm not sure that this is a good formula for everyone, but as I was coming up on mastering whatever level in my career I was at, I think it was controller, and we were talking about what would it look like if I was vice president. I remember sitting in his office. I remember the piece of paper, and he wrote out bullet points. Literally, 1, you need to be able to do this. 2, you need to be able to do this. And we would just check the box along the way. And he said to me, now, if you check all of these boxes and you get to the end, and you're exhausted and you're burned out, this is not a success. getting to vice president completely tattered and beaten up is not a success. You are a damn good controller. And if controller is where you stay, we are going to high five and we are going to celebrate it because you are really good at that job. You, this only works if you get to vice president and you still have more in you.
Wow.
And I got to vice president, and then I remember sitting in his office and him saying, I'm not really sure what it takes to break you. So we're going to keep doing this. We're going to keep laying out what we need. But again, if you get to the end and you're beaten up and broken, it didn't work. That is not a success. And we keep talking about it and we keep doing those things. Mm-hmm. And so I'm not sure that's the best formula for everyone. But because of that trust and because of that, we have a shared moral code, a shared value system. He gave me all the rope I needed. And I just continue to keep
that is,
going.
I know, that's awesome. That's great to hear. Well, I tell you what, Jason, I think our future guests have some pretty big shoes to fill. Thank you for your boldness, your honesty, your transparency. It's really cool kind of hearing your path and how you've cut it and who's poured into you and who you poured into.
We always should have a few podcasts back to back, and so... it'll be tough because we got to tell the next person, like, good luck.
Yeah, get ready.
Yeah. Hopefully you don't suck because she was amazing. So that was awesome. Great stuff today. And again, humbled to have you join us.
Thank you for having me.
To share. And again, thank you for making the trip out. And I look forward personally to having you to watching your journey, and hearing your journey. And, we started the CFO forum and discussion place, and we're really using the podcast as a vehicle to kind of build some relationship with CFOs so that we can turn it into a community, and that's kind of our goal. So again, if you're listening to this, join the community. Let's find a safe place where you can meet other CFOs like Sarah, who can be a tremendous value add to you, and share learned experiences. But the one thing that you've done, and which is true to character, is ask questions and highly engaged, which I love. And so thankful for that. Now we can get everybody else on board. And
there we go.
We'll be achieving our mission. So thanks for leading the way.
Thank you for having me. Yeah.
Thank you, sir.
And for our audience, again, we're getting things geared up with the CFO story. And again, the stories are going to be all over the board because we've got CFOs from all different walks of life joining us and sharing their story, a little bit about what their experience is, what got them there, and then also the things that they're really seeing in the field. And so our vision for this, Sammy, right, is to go out and create a platform where CFOs have an environment that they can feel is like, hey, I've got resources, because it's lonely out there as a CFO or controller. Anybody in a leadership role is automatically signed up for loneliness, but sometimes it can be even worse in that role because I think 95% of the organization is looking at you to explain to them what you're saying, right? Because they perhaps don't get it, but they want those answers, right? And then you got to package it in a way that they'll get it, but also is truthful and going to move the needle.
Yeah,
so
sure.
Tough gig, but you guys obviously you're doing a great job.
Thank you.
Guys, we want to thank you for tuning in. You can always reach out to Sammy Abood or Jason Lee on LinkedIn and get connected to us. And then you'll be able to, now you can go to any of the channels, Spotify, iTunes, any of the things that you want to tune into for podcast and get these episodes. So make sure you're tuning into that and then forward it on to somebody who needs to hear it. Let's continue to spread the good news about the work and the things that we're trying to do for the CFO community. And we'll see you guys next week.
Thank you.